Last week we got the temple finished, so we finished chapter 6. I would like to backtrack on one thing. I'm in Josephus now, and I'm in Antiquities 11:4-9, and this is talking about the Samaritans. But the Samaritans, being evil and enviously disposed to the Jews, wrought them many mischiefs by reliance on their riches and by their pretense that they were allied to the Persians on account that thence they came. In other words, they're saying that we're from the original Persian Empire. And whatsoever it was that they were enjoined to pay the Jews by the king's order out of their tribute for the sacrifices, they would not pay it. You remember the previous note from Darius says, give them whatever they need for their sacrifices and so forth so that they can pray for me, among other things. And the Samaritans weren't doing it. They had also the governors favorable to them and assisting them for that purpose, nor did they spare to hurt them, either by themselves or by others, as far as they were able. So they were working hard against the Jews in the temple. So the Jews determined to send a message to King Darius in favor of the people of Jerusalem and in order to accuse the Samaritans. So you remember the first letter that went back from the Samaritans to the Persians says, if these guys finish that temple, your influence on the west side of the Euphrates is over. Of course, they stopped for a number of years. Then they started again, and Darius said, let them start, and furthermore, give them whatever they need for sacrifices. So the Samaritans aren't doing that. So now the Jews are going back to the king, and they're going to complain about the Samaritans. So the ambassadors were Zerubbabel and four others of the rulers, and as soon as the king knew from the ambassadors the accusations and complaints they brought against the Samaritans, he gave them an epistle to be carried to the governors and council of Samaria, the contents of which epistle were these. So Zerubbabel was one of the guys that goes back. And you remember that Zerubbabel was a personal friend of Darius before he became emperor. When Darius was emperor, he became one of the three bodyguards for Darius, very favorably disposed. So when the Jews go back to complain about the Samaritans, they send Zerubbabel because he will be able to get an audience and listen. So then the king said, King Darius, to Tengannus and Sembabas, the governors of the Samaritans, to Sadrachis and Bobalo, and the rest of their fellow servants who were in Samaria, Zerubbabel, Ananias, and Mordecai, the ambassadors of the Jews, complain of you, that you are obstructing them in building the temple, and do not supply them with the expenses which I commanded you to do for the offering of their sacrifices. My will, therefore, is this, that upon the reading of this epistle, you supply them with whatsoever they want for their sacrifices, and that out of the royal treasury of the tribes of Samaria, as the priest shall desire. What he's saying is, all right, I told you to do this. I want you to do it. And furthermore, the Samaritans are going to pay for it all. That's the sense of that message. So you mess with Darius and he's not happy. And the letter concludes, my will therefore is this, that upon reading of this epistle, you supply them with whatsoever they want for their sacrifices, and that out of the royal treasury of the tributes of Samaria, as the priest shall desire, that they may not leave off their offering daily sacrifices, nor praying to God for me and the Persians. So give them whatever they want. The Samaritans pay for it. And I don't want to hear about this anymore. So now Josephus will continue in chapter 5. And that matches Ezra chapter 7. So I'm in book 11, chapter 5. And I'm just going to read a little bit of here, because there's some information in here that is not in Ezra. So upon the death of Darius, Xerxes, his son, took the kingdom, who, as he inherited his father's kingdom, So did he inherit his piety toward God and honor of him, for he did all things suitably to his father relating to divine worship, and was exceeding friendly to the Jews. Now, about this time, the son of Jeshua, whose name was Joachim, was the high priest. Moreover, there was now in Babylon a righteous man, and one that enjoyed a great reputation among the multitude. He was the principal priest of the people, and his name was Esdras. Esdras is how Josephus spells Ezra. So now we're going to switch back and go to Ezra chapter 7. Now after this, in the reign of Artaxerxes, king of Persia, notice that Josephus calls him Xerxes, Ezra calls him Artaxerxes. And one of the things about figuring out when things are happening is these kings go by different names in different documents, so it's kind of hard sometimes to nail down who's who. So now after this, in the reign of Artaxerxes, king of Persia, Ezra, the son of Sariah, the son of Azariah, the son of Hilkiah, son of Salum, son of Zadok, son of Ahitub, son of Amariah, son of Azariah, son of Merioth, son of Zariah, son of Uzi, son of Buki, son of Abishua, son of Phinehas, son of Eleazar, son of Aaron, the chief priest. One of the things, of course, that Ezra does in this return is he very carefully documents the lineage of everybody that he can possibly document, including himself. So he is a priest and is able to recite his lineage all the way back to Aaron. Verse 6. This Ezra went up from Babylonia. He was a scribe, skilled in the law of Moses that the Lord, the God of Israel, had given, and the king granted him all that he asked, for the hand of the Lord, his God, was with him. So Ezra is going to lead a group back, and his job is going to be to instruct the people in Torah. So I'm now in verse 7 of Ezra 7. And there went up also to Jerusalem in the seventh year of Artaxerxes, the king, some of the people of Israel, and some of the priests and Levites, the singers and gatekeepers, and the temple servants. And Ezra came to Jerusalem in the fifth month, which was in the seventh year of the king. For on the first day of the first month, he began to go out from Babylon, and on the first day of the fifth month, came to Jerusalem. So basically it is a four-month trip on foot or on camelback or on horseback or whatever kind of thing they were doing. 9 again now. For on the first day of the first month, he began to go up from Babylonia, and on the first day of the fifth month, he came to Jerusalem. For the good hand of his God was with him. For Ezra had set his heart to study the law of the Lord and to do it, and to teach the statutes and rules to Israel. The same information is in chapter 5 of Josephus. And what he does, which is sort of glossed over in Ezra, is he gathers a whole bunch of folks to make up a caravan to go to Jerusalem. And one of the things he notices, wait a minute, we don't have any Levites. So he goes and sends word out, and he gets a bunch of Levites to go with him. He also has been given treasure by the king. So I'm going to be over here in Josephus. So this is part of his decree. Let them also take with them those presents which I and my friends have vowed, with all that silver and gold which is found in the country of Babylonians as dedicated to God, and let all this be carried to Jerusalem to God for sacrifices. Let it also be lawful for thee and thy brethren to make as many vessels of silver and gold as thou pleasest. Thou shalt also dedicate these holy vessels which have been given to thee, and as many more as thou hast a mind to make, and take the expenses out of the king's treasury. So what the king has done is opened up the treasury and said, you guys make as many gold and silver vessels as you think you're going to need. Verse 127, I have moreover written to the treasurer of Syria and Phoenicia, that they take care of these affairs that Esdras the priest and reader of the laws of God is sent about, and that God may not be at all angry with me or with my children. I grant all that is necessary for sacrifices to God according to the law, as far as 100 akoris of wheat. I enjoin you not to lay any treacherous imposition or other tributes upon their priests or Levites, or sacred singers, porters, or sacred servants, or scribes to the temple. And do thou, O Esdras, appoint judges according to the wisdom given thee of God, and those such as understand the law, that they may judge all Syria and Phoenicia. And do thou instruct these also which are ignorant of it. So the deal here is, I want you to set up judges, and it's not just in Jerusalem. Notice it's in Syria and Phoenicia. So what he's done is he essentially made Jerusalem, if you will, the capital of that region. Israel, Syria, and Phoenicia. He's also said, run the place according to the law of your God. And do whatever you need to do to teach everybody what that law is. Okay? And, oh, by the way, I have opened up my treasury, so you're going to have lots of resources when you go. So I'm now down in verse 2 of chapter 5 of Antiquities 11. When Esdras had received this epistle, he was very joyful, I guess so, and began to worship God and confessed that he had been the cause of the king's great favor to him. And for the same reason, he gave all thanks to God. So he read the epistle at Babylon to those Jews that were there, but he kept the epistle himself. And he read it to everybody, he hung on to the document, and sent a copy of it to all those of his own nation who were in Media. So what he's done is he's made a copy of this, and he sent it all over to the Jews that remain in the exile. And when these Jews had understood what piety the king had towards God and what kindness he had for Esdras, they were all greatly pleased. Nay, many of them took their effects with them and came to Babylon. They picked up and headed to Babylon, as very desirous of going down to Jerusalem. But when the entire body of the people of Israel remained in that country, wherefore there were about 2 tribes in Asia and Europe subject to the Romans, while the 10 tribes were beyond the Euphrates till now, and are an immense multitude, and not to be estimated by number. So what he's saying is, the people that are going back with Esdras are a very small portion of Israel. Some of them are in the controls of the Romans, and some of them are the remnant of the house of Israel that has been scattered. So we're only talking about the refugees from Judah here. Now there came a great number of priests and Levites and porters and sacred singers and sacred servants of Ezra. So he gathered those that were in the captivity together beyond the Euphrates and stayed there 3 days and ordered a fast for them, that they might make their prayers to God for their preservation, that they might suffer no misfortunes by the way, either from their enemies or from any other incident. For Esdras had said beforehand that he had told the king how God would preserve them, so that he had not thought fit to request that he would send horsemen to conduct them. So the idea here is, God's going to take care of us. You don't need to send cavalry. We'll be fine, O king. This is on a 4-month journey. All right, go back to Ezra now. This is a copy of the letter that King Artaxerxes gave to Ezra the priest, the scribe, the man learned in matters of the commandments of the Lord and his statutes of Israel. Artaxerxes, king of kings, to Ezra the priest, scribe of the law of God of heaven, peace. And now I make a decree that any one of the people of Israel or their priests or Levites in my kingdom who freely offers to go to Jerusalem may go with you. So, first thing is, you're all released. For you were sent by the king and his 7 counselors to make inquiries about Judah and Jerusalem according to the law of your God, which is in your hand, and also to carry the silver and gold that the king and his counselors have freely offered to the God of Israel, whose dwelling is in Jerusalem. In Josephus, we got the idea that he got a lot of precious metal in that part. here in this, the idea is that the nobles of Persia are sending tithes, if you will, offerings, whatever you want, with the idea that Ezra is going to pray for them. The other thing to notice is freely offered to the God of Israel, whose dwelling is in Jerusalem. I take from this that they're still firmly polytheists. They just recognize that the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob is a very powerful God. But they don't consider him in kind any different from any of the other gods in the area, simply a lot more powerful, if you will, and obviously territorial. So now to verse 16. With all the silver and gold that you shall find in the whole province of Babylonia, and with the freewill offerings of your people and the priest vowed willingly for the house of their God that is in Jerusalem. In other words, you guys get to go past the hat in Babylon and take anything that shows up and take it with you. With this money then, you shall with all diligence buy bulls, rams, and lambs with their grain offerings and their drink offerings, and you shall offer them on the altar of the house of your God that is in Jerusalem. Whatever seems good to you and your brothers to do with the rest of the silver and gold, you may do according to the will of your God. In other words, spend as much as you need on sacrifices and you're going to have more than you need. And you do with that whatever you want. The vessels that have been given you for the service of the house of God, you shall deliver before the God of Jerusalem. And whatever else is required for the house of your God, which it falls to you to provide, you may provide out of the king's treasury. So you've got these freewill offerings and you've got the offerings of the nobles of Persia. And, oh, by the way, if that's not enough, you can hit the treasury. This is pretty generous. 21. And I, Artaxerxes the king, make decree to all the treasurers in the province beyond the river, whatever Ezra the priest, the scribe of the law of God of heaven, requires of you, let it be done with all diligence, up to 100 talents of silver, 100 cores of wheat, 100 baths of wine, 100 baths of oil, and salt without prescribing how much. So you got all this money, but we're also going to give you all of this in kind. 23. Whatever is decreed by the God of heaven, let it be done in full for the house of the God of heaven, lest his wrath be against the realm of the king and his sons. We also notify you that it shall not be lawful to impose tribute, custom, or toll on any one of the priests, the Levites, the singers, the doorkeepers, the temple servants, or other servants of this house of God. In other words, the clergy is tax-free. 25. And you, Ezra, according to the wisdom of your God that is in your hand, appoint magistrates and judges who may judge all the people in the province beyond the river. So what he's done is he has given Jerusalem and Ezra civil authority in the provinces beyond the river, which is Phoenicia, Syria, etc. And I don't know if the Persian Empire also took in Moab and Ammon and all those. I just don't know the answer to that right off the top of my head. 25 again. And you, Ezra, according to the wisdom of your God that is in your hand, appoint magistrates and judges who may judge all the people in the province beyond the river, all such as know the laws of your God. And those who do not know them, you will teach. Whoever will not obey the law of your God and the law of the king, let judgment be strictly executed upon him, whether for death or for banishment or for confiscation of his goods or for imprisonment. Blessed be the Lord, the God of our fathers, who put such a thing as this into the heart of the king, to beautify the house of the Lord that is in Jerusalem, and who extended to me his steadfast love before the king and his counselors. Before all the king's mighty officers, I took courage, for the hand of the Lord my God was on me, and I gathered leading men from Israel to go up with me. Now, we have a genealogy here, and I'm not going to read it all. So Ezra chapter 8. These are the heads of their fathers' houses, and this is the genealogy of those who went up with me from Babylonia in the reign of Artaxerxes the king, of the son of Phinehas, and so forth. We have numbers here, and I'm not going to list them all. We're just going to skip over that, and if you are, in fact, a biblical scholar that needs to trace lineages, there it's where it is. So we're all the way down now to verse 15. I gathered them to the river that runs to Ahava, and there we camped 3 days. This is what I was talking about earlier. As I reviewed the people and the priests, I found there none of the sons of Levi. Then I sent for Eleazar, Ariel, Shemaiah, Elnathan, Jerib, Elnathan, Nazar, Zechariah, and Meshullam, leading men, and for Jorab and Elnathan, who were men of insight, and sent them to Edo, the leading man of the place, Casipha, telling them what to say to Edo and his brothers, the temple servants at the place of Casipha, namely, to send us ministers for the house of our God. Now, this is where it says as he was making up his travel party, he discovered that he needed some Levites. 18. By the good hand of our God on us, they brought us a man of discretion, of the sons of Mahli, the son of Levi, the son of Israel, namely Sherebiah, with his sons and kinsmen. Also Hashabiah, and with him Jeshiah, of the sons of Merari, with his kinsmen and their sons, besides 220 of the temple servants whom David and his officials had set apart to attend the Levites. These were all mentioned by name. 21. Then I proclaimed a fast there at the river Ahava, that we might humble ourselves before our God, to seek from him a safe journey for ourselves, our children, all our goods. For I was ashamed to ask the king for a band of soldiers and horsemen to protect us against the enemy on our way, since we had told the king that the hand of our God is for good on all who seek him, and the power of his wrath against all who forsake him. So we fasted and implored our God for this, and he listened to our entreaty. Verse 24. Then I set apart 12 of the leading priests, Sherebiah, Hashabiah, and 10 of their kinsmen with them, and I weighed out to them the silver and the gold and the vessels, the offering for the house of our God, that the king and his counselors and his lords and all Israel had presented and offered. I weighed into their hands 650 talents of silver, and silver vessels worth 200 talents, and 100 talents of gold, 20 bowls of gold worth 1,000 darics, and 2 vessels of fine bright bronze as precious as gold. And I said to them, you are holy to the Lord, and the vessels are holy, and the silver and the gold are a freewill offering to the Lord, the God of our fathers. Guard them and keep them until you weigh them before the chief priest and the Levites and the heads of fathers' houses in Israel and Jerusalem, within the chambers of the house of the Lord. So the priest and the Levites took over the weight of the silver and the gold and the vessels to bring them to Jerusalem, to the house of our God. That is a serious amount of money. A talent, I think, is 70 pounds. So 100 talents of gold is 7,000 pounds of gold. 31. Then we departed from the river Ahava on the 12th day of the first month to go to Jerusalem. The hand of our God was on us, and he delivered us from the hand of the enemy and from ambushes by the way. We came to Jerusalem, and there we remained 3 days. On the 4th day, within the house of God, the silver and the gold and the vessels were weighed into the hands of Meremoth, the priest, son of Uriah. And with him was Eleazar, the son of Phinehas, and with them were the Levites, Jozabad, son of Jeshua, and Noadiah, the son of Binui. The whole was counted and weighed, and the weight of everything was recorded. So they had gotten there and they have delivered all the stuff. One of the things to keep in mind is this is a large party of people. This is not half a dozen guys and a string of camels. So the fact that they didn't ask for a squad of soldiers, they had enough people with them that it would have taken somebody serious to go after them. Robin Hood wouldn't have been able to do it by himself. There's just too many. So the fact that they went without an escort is a testament to their faith and all that. But on the other hand, there were a lot of them there. And I suspect most of them were armed, personal weapons kind of thing. So verse 35. At that time, those who had come from captivity, the returned exiles, offered burnt offerings to the God of Israel, 12 bulls for all Israel, 96 rams, 77 lambs, and as a sin offering, 12 male goats. All this was a burnt offering to the Lord. They also delivered the king's commission to the king's satraps and to the governors of the province beyond the river, and they aided the people in the house of God. So they integrated and became part of the group that was in Jerusalem. All right, what's going on here is one of the things that has happened is the people who return have intermarried with the people who were left behind, who were not Hebrews. So as they're coming back, Ezra is going to discover that we got all these people that are married to whatever, and what should we do about that? One of the things to keep in mind as you read this, because there's going to be some harsh stuff that's going to happen, is one of the reasons that Israel went astray and lost the plot is because they married with foreign women, and those foreign women brought their religious practices in and raised their children with the knowledge of foreign gods and so forth, and gradually Israel drifted away. And that's not even counting Solomon, who deliberately built worship sites for his foreign wives to keep them happy. You all know the Torah. One of the things that is permitted if you conquer an enemy people and you see a really good-looking gal among the conquered people, you are allowed to take her back to Israel, and after giving her a change of clothes and shaving her and letting her sit for a month, you're allowed to marry her. The problem with that is she will have grown up with a different god. So you'll have children with her, and the cradle songs that these children hear are probably going to be the cradle songs from Moab or Ammon or wherever it was she grew up. So your children then from the cradle be acculturated to other gods. And what winds up happening is that Israel drifted away and went into idol worship, and finally God had to sand them off. So that's the situation Ezra is finding. And of course, Ezra knows his own history and he knows what happened. And so when he finds out about this, he is going to be upset. So now chapter 9. After these things had been done, the officials approached me and said, "The people of Israel and the priests and the Levites have not separated themselves from the peoples of the land with their abominations, from the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, the Jebusites, the Ammonites, the Moabites, the Egyptians, and the Amorites. For they have taken some of their daughters to be wives for themselves and for their sons, so that the holy race has mixed itself with the peoples of the land. And in this faithlessness, the head of the officials and the chief man has been foremost." Everybody's doing it, to include the leadership. If everybody's doing it to include the leadership, there isn't anybody who is able to root it out. If the boss is doing something wrong and everybody in the town is also doing something wrong, there's nobody that can call them account and stop it. The comment was the princes came. Well, who are these princes that came? Are they also doing it? And the answer to that is probably not. They probably have nice Jewish wives and they're looking at everybody else and saying, "Whoa, we're not supposed to do this." The other thing that you should remember is that according to the law of Moses, a priest has two options to marry. He can marry the virgin daughter of another priest, or he can marry the widow of another priest. Priests are not supposed to be out there freewheeling. So the fact that you've got priests that are marrying the local gals and so forth is a double hit, if you will. The first hit, of course, is mixing with the indigenous tribes, and then the second hit is, wait a minute, you're a priest. You've got restrictions on who you can marry. Verse 3, as soon as I heard this, I tore my garment and my cloak and pulled hair from my beard and my head and sat appalled. Then all who trembled at the word of the God of Israel because of the faithlessness of the returned exiles gathered around me while I sat appalled until the evening sacrifice. I'm not sure how you sit appalled, but he was. And nobody was messing with him. Doesn't say he sat and put on sackcloth and sat in ashes, but he was clearly distressed and nobody bothered him until the evening sacrifice. Verse 5. And at the evening sacrifice, I rose from my fasting with my garment and my cloak torn and fell upon my knees and spread out my hands to the Lord my God, saying, O my God, I am ashamed and blush to lift my face to you, my God, for our iniquities have risen higher than our heads, and our guilt has mounted up to the heavens. From the days of our fathers to this day, we have been in great guilt. And for our iniquities, we, our kings and our priests, have been given into the hand of the kings of the lands, with to the sword, to captivity, to plundering, and to utter shame as it is today. But now, for a brief moment, favor has been shown by the Lord our God to leave us a remnant and give us a secure hold within this holy place, that our God may brighten our eyes and grant us a little reviving from our slavery. First off, the reason we were taken into captivity in the first place is because we were doing things that we are ashamed of. Now you have shown your face upon us. You have given us favor. You have brought us back to this place. And what did we do? I mean, that's sort of the sense of the prayer. Verse 9. For we are slaves, yet our God has not forsaken us in our slavery, but has extended to us the steadfast love of the kings of Persia, to grant us some reviving, to set up the house of our God, to repair its ruins, and to give us protection in Judea and Jerusalem. And now, O our God, what shall we say after this? For we have forsaken your commandments, which you have commanded by your servant the prophet, saying, the land that you are entering to take possession of it is a land impure, with the impurity of the peoples of the lands, with their abominations that have filled it from end to end, with their uncleanness. Therefore, do not give your daughters to their sons, neither take their daughters for your sons, and never seek their peace or prosperity, that you may be strong and eat the good of the land and leave it for an inheritance to your children forever. Again, he's quoting Moses. Because Moses said, don't intermarry with these people. 13. And after all that has come upon us, for our evil deeds and for our great guilt, seeing that you, our God, have punished us less than our iniquities deserved and have given us such a remnant as this, shall we break your commandments again and intermarry with the peoples who practice these abominations? Would you not be angry with us until you consumed us, so that there should be no remnant, nor any to escape? O Lord, the God of Israel, you are just, for we are left a remnant that has escaped, as it is today. Behold, we are before you in our guilt, for none can stand before you because of this. We'll stop there for the evening. But one of the things that Ezra was sent back there to do is teach Torah. And he's not only supposed to teach it to Israel, he's supposed to teach it to all the surrounding nations, because Torah is to become the basis for civil law alongside the law of the Persians. So after all the celebration and all that kind of stuff, he then looks around and sees, oh, you married a Canaanite. You married a Perizzite. So he'll now move to get that straightened out.